Welcome to the Post Racing Podcast with Ron Robinson and Sean Trabas. Post Racing, the site for winners.
Good afternoon, Sean. Welcome back.
Yes, I'd love to tell you how good it is to be back, but that would be a fib, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it?
Yeah, great time in South Africa. Always do. I won't bore anyone with how lucky I was, etc., etc. What I will say is that there's a bookmakers out there called Hollywood Bets. They are over here as well. No, I'm not paid, and no, I'm not working for them. But I got speaking to some of their bosses over there, and they've got a really, really good attitude in that they're sort of trying to meet halfway between bookmaker stroke Hong Kong Jockey Club, in that they take lots and lots of bets, as you'd expect them to do. They run a casino and all sorts of slots, which is where their main money comes from, to be fair, unfortunately, same as it is here. But horse racing is their passion. Horse racing is their love. And they sponsor just about everything over there. Rugby teams, cricket teams, all sorts of stuff going on. So they're attempting to make as much money as they can, like every other business does, but also giving plenty of it back, which is fairly unusual. So
you can't knock it, can you?
No, I'm not suggesting we all open Hollywood Bets accounts and you all go and bet with them. I'm not saying that. I don't know what their business model is over here. They may be as good or as bad, depending on how you look at it, as every other bookmaker is with their UK operation. So I'm not bigging them up for that reason. But it was nice to speak to people who weren't just talking in, well, rand in their case, but pounds, shillings and pence for us old folk, as to how much money they make from the sport. They were looking at what they could do to better the sport, which, of course, that's fattening up your own golden goose. Let's be realistic.
Oh, yeah.
But they plan to go that way. They're financing racing over there. They're buying race courses over there, training centres, and they're investing in their own future as well as the future of the sport, which is something that certain bookmakers over here could consider doing.
Well, instead of going to war, you mean?
Yeah, well, more of that later, as they say in all the best programs.
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
It was interesting to see someone positive about horse racing, not about how much money they can make, not just about the betting side of things. Obviously, that's their business, but positive about expanding the sport. Their attitude is the more people interested in racing, the more people bet, and we can cream our, I'm going to say 10%, whatever, off the top of that. So if we can increase the turnover by £1 million a year, then we increase our income by £100,000 a year. And I have nothing wrong with that attitude at all, because the sport benefits from it. So
it does.
Best of luck to them, and let's hope they succeed over here and start doing some of the same. Anyway, where were we going to start? We've got loads of things to talk about.
We've got six major topics to go through. So, Andy, I hope you've got a few tinnies in the fridge, mate. You're going to need them.
Yep.
We're going to start with this new docu-series.
Yeah.
Now, it's like you've said, you can't actually have a bet in it. And I've not had a chance to view it yet. But like we were saying before we came on, it's not aimed at you and me, is it?
No, it was quite strange to see it from a newcomer's viewpoint, which is clearly where it's aimed. And it's very easy, as I said to you before we came here, to sit and go, oh, I knew that anyway. I knew that as well. But that's because we're involved in the sport. And I suspect, to a lesser or greater extent, a lot of the people listening to this, well, both of the people listening to this, have also been involved in racing, be it as a punter or otherwise, for too many years to mention. But it was well done. It was flashy. It was very colourful. I hadn't really taken note. It pointed out my own foibles, if you like. I hadn't really taken note of just what a colourful sport we have. Not just the jockey colours, but the fashions and the green grass, watching it on the TV. Yeah, it was really colourful. Bits of slow-mo here and there when needed. What they have done, quite rightly, is they've cherry-picked the characters of the sport. As I've written in one of my articles, that you don't have to be a character and a personality to be very, very good at riding horses. So they could have picked some Duffins, if you like, to go and interview and talk to, but they didn't. Harry Cobden was good, Nico de Boinville was good, Briony Frost was very good, Paul Nicholls is larger than life and continues to be so. What other people think of it is another matter. Do they think these guys are acting or putting it on for the camera? And I've known Paul for a long time, and he's not. He's just like that, full stop. He loves to win, he loves his horses, and he wears his heart on his sleeve. So I thought it was really good. How many people watch it is a separate issue. The main thing I said to Ron as well is that betting was hardly, if ever, mentioned. And I see that as a good thing, because sometimes I think, because of what we do, we forget it's actually a sport that someone allows us to bet on. And not the other way around. It's not a betting medium. Yeah,
people forget it's a spectacle, don't they?
Well, I think sometimes I do, if I'm honest.
I do. I'll hands up. I do, yeah.
We sit down here. I'm sitting here as we're recording this. The 2:10 at Utoxeter of all places is about to start, and I'm looking at 10 to 11 boils, whatever it is. That's the favourite. All just gone evens on the exchange. But that's not really of that much relevance to the sport as a whole, other than financial needs. It's not the be all and end all, and it reminded me it's not. So I'm quite pleased I watched it, if it's only for that reason. Whether we attract people to the sport, we can only try. And again, like I said, the BHA. Changes that some work and some don't. At least they're trying to do something. So,
but do you know what I'd have done in conjunction with the docuseries?
Mm-hmm.
I'd have had people on the high street, the following day, asking people, "Did you watch this last night?" Because all I've seen so far are people inside the sport being asked for their opinion on the docuseries. I haven't heard a comment from anybody yet that hasn't got anything to do with racing. It's like preaching to the converted. They've got to stop doing that and get it out there on the high streets. And if people say, no, do you know what? I didn't see that. Give them a leaflet and say, well, tune into the next one and watch it on Catch Up TV. And then fill in this survey and let us know what you thought. And do something about building up an empirical database of people who you may well get attracted to the sport at some point in the future. But there seems to be no follow-on with any of this stuff. Crazy.
None that I've seen, but the trouble is that because of who we are, which sounds really pompous and I don't mean it that way, we're reading the comments in the Racing Post, which by definition are and then we're reading it on the Sporting Life by definition, and then we're following Twitter accounts, which are 9 times out of 10 in my case racing folk. So I don't actually have access to outsiders. Terrible phrase to use.
Why weren't the Racing Post on the high street asking people who have nothing to do with racing, did you watch this last night?
I suppose you know,
it's what's it's in our it. Trade paper. Get out there and do something. You know, madness, madness.
I don't think it's done any harm to oh, God, it sounds so pompous again. I mean, one of those days, send an office trainee outside the main offices in London for 10 minutes with a clipboard.
No.
Wouldn't have killed anybody, to be fair. No. I don't suppose they thought of it, in all honesty. And again...
Well, they should. I did.
what's in it for them will be the answer to that. And that's not a dig. That's a dig at everybody. You know. Bookmakers could do a survey as well. But again, I suppose they're talking about people who bet on the racing. So they're like, I don't care. They didn't give me a winner of the 3:30 ADOC, so I'm not really bothered. I suppose they wouldn't be able to get the outsider's view of things, but again, it's in their best interest to get people interested in the sport because it creates more money and more income for them. But
exactly,
rolling along as they are, waiting to see what somebody else does next instead of grabbing the bull by the horns and doing it themselves. But meanwhile, I think it was quite good. Would I recommend watching? Yeah, I would do it. It's only about an hour long. It won't kill you on a Friday evening. You do it on catch up when you fast forward through the adverts and you're down to about 40 minutes anyway.
Yeah.
I did, coincidentally. It's quite interesting. And at the very least, it's a reminder of just how good this sport actually is.
It's the best. It is the best. I've written in newsletters many times that I used to be a season ticket holder at Anfield.
My commission,
and I'd often miss kickoff to go and see the 3:10 at Sandown. You know, I've done it loads of times. Because racing's my sport. It's my sport.
Did you pay extra for a restricted view?
in the betting shop at the race, yeah, probably.
At Anfield, definitely. No, that's another. As an Everton supporter, I was duty bound to say that.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful sport, and it reminded me just how good it really is instead of the day-to-day tragedy that we sometimes have to go through to pay the bills. But it was good fun, and I recommend you tuning in. So if you win enough money off Ron's Ons this week, the next question is, can you afford to buy an ice cream?
I've got a Twitter feed. You've got to have all these things, haven't you?
Yeah.
So I'm going through it the other day, and some bloke's posted up six ice creams, 30 quid at Chepstow. And I thought, what? What sorts of ice creams are these? And there was a picture of him holding 3.99s in each hand. Six ice creams, 30 quid. And that's without having had to pay to get into the track to watch the racing in the field. And I'm thinking to myself, you wonder why people don't go racing? £30 for six ice creams?
Well, they're not called 99s anymore, Ron. They're called £4.99s.
Yes, fact.
Boom, boom. Yeah. Sorry. My dad has quit. Yeah, I've written down here. I described him as Mr. Whippy Cone, so I've forgotten the phrase 99s. I had a quick look, as is my wont, on the Iceland site. Other supermarkets are available. And you can buy Magnums, which is my ice cream of choice, for 70 pence each.
Yeah.
So where the £5 comes from is anybody's guess. However, here we go again. One of my old favourites. You know this. What's coming now, Ron? Is it cream seller's fault, or is it the race course's fault? How much did they charge him or her to put the van on the track? Now, if they charged him, because I like easy maths because I'm a bit stupid, if he charged him £500 a day for his pitch, which is a supposition, and he's going to sell 500 ice creams a day, he's got to make a quid extra on every single just to break even. Then he's got to pay his staff costs, then he's got to pay his own costs, etc., etc. So my point is going to come here is the same as it has with bars, and I know this happens with bars. I've spoken to people at racecourses in the past. The racecourses invariably charge the huge sums of money. The poor bloke in the ice cream van or the minimum wage guy working in the bar is the one that gets the abuse from the customers. And the racecourses sit there quietly saying nothing to do with me. And that's the fear factor. And this week sounds like I'm having to go at racecourses, and perhaps I am because there's more to follow. But someone needs to look at this and go, look, you can't keep ripping people off. They seem to have forgotten social media exists. Racing.
Oh, I know. It appears to be the case. Yeah.
Because this guy in the old days, so it was you or me, Ron, goes to the track, buys the four ice creams, comes back, goes down the pub with 10 of his mates on a Friday night or whatever, and says, bloody hell, excuse my name, I was ripped off for ice creams at Chepstow, blah, blah, blah. And by definition, someone else is going to go, wow, well, how much was it to get in? And then you're going to say, well, it's 23 quid to get in or whatever it was, blah, blah, £6. You're not selling the sport, are you? And that was in the old days with 10 people going, well, I'm not going racing then. That's far too expensive. Yep. Now they put it on a Twitter feed. It's not 10 people who see it. It's 10,000 people who see it.
10,000, yeah.
And possibly some of that same 10,000 watched the documentary last Friday and went, ooh, that looks interesting. I think I'll go racing. Closely followed by looking at the Twitter feed going, not at £5 an ice cream, I'm not.
Yeah. And then you find out a few days later that Musselburgh have got a 7-race card on where I think four or five of them were class six and the rest were class five.
Yep.
And they wanted 30 quid to get in.
Yep.
So if you're taking a family racing, I don't know how much a family ticket would be at Musselburgh, but let's say there's a discount of 20 quid for the kids. So you're spending 2.30s on the adults, 2.10s on the kids. There's 80 quid before you've spent another penny. Right, and then you think the kids want an ice cream. Well, so do I. Well, there's another 20 quid, you know. And you're thinking, where's all this money coming from? That's before you've had a little bet, you know.
Yeah, I think under 18s are free to get in at every race course. I have to say think so. Used to be the case, it's that times change, etc. It used to be the case, however, it's not a cheap afternoon out. It is a good afternoon out,
it's great,
but they need to look at the they've never acknowledged that they're in competition for the leisure pounders, I believe it used to be called.
No, they don't. No.
And that there are other things you could do. Should I go to the cinema where it's a Wednesday night, for want of an argument, therefore it's fairly cheap, I can get in for a 4 or 5 quid at my local cinema on a midweek? Or should I go race at 25 quid a time? No brainer. You can stop off and have a meal in Wetherspoons and a couple of beers and still have change out of your entry fee to get into the race.
You could. Yeah.
Yes. I'm not saying it's a rip-off or it isn't. What I am saying is that they need to at least be looking at it and going, perhaps we need to be looking at what we do here. You can't just keep bars have done the same over the years, changing subject very, very slightly. Price of beer goes up, less customers in the pub. Says the pub, what should we do? I know, we'll put 10p on a pint. That way we get the money back. Week later, less people in the pub. What should we do? Put another 10p on a pint. It doesn't work. You can't do a longer term strategy than that. Okay, what if we dropped it just once, drop it to £20 to get in or £15 to get in instead of 25? Let's see if we get an extra 500 people, 300 people on the gate, and our overall ticket revenue is better than it was before.
Yeah.
Do you see them trying that very often? If they do, they don't advertise it very well, that's for sure.
No, but that is it. Like, I go back to the marketing of racing through this docuseries. There's nobody does anything. There's nobody promotes the sport outside the sport. It's crazy.
But the bottom line, and we say this every week, or I do if you don't, is you go back to the old days, the good old days of racing dictatorship. Someone, like Hong Kong does, needs to take over the whole kit and caboodle.
Yeah.
Because then BHA, Jockey Club, call it what you want, a new name, is in charge of all the race courses and can actually make decisions.
Yeah.
At the moment, everyone's hands are tied. The race courses want to do this. The horsemen's group want to do that. The BHA want to do this. The fixture list doesn't fit with any of them. ARC don't agree with anything anybody says ever, just on principle. Sometimes it feels like that. And the bookmakers go, I'm not paying this percentage for that. And you're trying to pull it, have a tug of war with, and people pulling it in about 37 different directions. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
But it won't happen in my lifetime. I think a lot of people do know that's the case.
Mm.
But it's what you do about it. But while we're here, I think our next, it was another go at Chepstow. Oh, wasn't ice cream. poor old Chepstow. Never mind. My apologies to Chepstow. Yeah. 43,000 in prize money paid out on, I believe it was an afternoon, or it might have been an evening meeting, on one particular meeting, 43,000 in prize money. And allegedly, because these figures are not public, so it's allegedly, I have to add that, they took in three times that amount in media rights income. Add to that the fact that sponsors for those races will have put something into the kitty of that 43,000 as well.
There'll be an advertising in the race cards.
Yeah, and then the levy board as well will have put something in, and then the entry fees will have put something in. So it's not even like they paid out the 43,000 themselves and then kept three times that in media rights. They've probably paid out 25,000 themselves maximum, and I'm probably being generous there, and then took five times that back in media rights. Now, that's causing quite an argument amongst the racing fraternity, especially with Fluff.
Well, it is. I mean, there's about to be a full-scale war, isn't there?
Flutter.
At least it feels that way. It feels that way, you know?
It does. Well, Flutter are the first to flex their muscles.
Yeah.
And they own PayPower and Sky Bet. They've been offering SP only and not pricing up early on certain tracks when they feel the media rights money they're paying is too much. That's my really basic understanding. If you think it's different to that, feel free to say so. And the race course is saying you can't do that, and it's gone to legal this and legal that. I don't really know who's winning that argument, to be honest with you. But I believe it's a drive to try and get the race courses to come back to the negotiation table to say, okay, we'll take less media rights money necessary. However, that in turn, of course, it's like I always say, you can't tax rich people. If you tax rich people, all they do is feed that cost back down the chain, and it always ends up at the bottom. That is what will happen with racing. If you take some of that media rights money away, then Chepstow or whoever, other race courses are available, like that one as well, we'll turn around and go, okay, well, we're not losing our profit. We'll just cut the price money then.
Yeah.
Or put a pound on entry fees to get in for the public. They won't end up paying that cost. It will filter down and the rest of us will end up some way or the other. So I don't actually know what the answer is, but it could be interesting. I mean, luckily, there's a plethora of bookmakers out there that we can all lose. And the fact that Paddy Power and Skybet aren't betting on a particular meeting just means I switched to another bookmaker person.
Well, yeah, that is what's happening, isn't it?
So I don't really know what good that's actually going to do to Flutter in the long term if they keep it out. So this could be a war of attrition before somebody jumps out of the starting stalls and puts an even bigger oar into things and makes things worse than they are now. But
what I'm going to do now is say we'll skip number four for now and go to number five on our list.
Yep.
And say, will this eventually happen here?
Yep.
And that is, there's a Swedish bookmaker called ATG, right? And now the way it worked was they first told their national hunt racing organization, we don't want to take bets on your sports unless there's only like four hurdles in it or four fences in a race. And that was what they did. And then they said, it's still too dangerous. We're going to stop taking bets on national hunt racing altogether. But not only in Sweden, but also in Britain and in Ireland, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now they're talking about not taking bets on anything that's got anything to do with animals whatsoever. So it basically just be football and tennis and any other sport that basically only includes a human being, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is this actually going to filter through to here? Because with this war that's going on at the moment between the bookmakers and the race courses, are the bookmakers going to turn around and say, well, racing can clear off, we'll just do football and cricket and tennis and motor racing? Although, who would have a bet on motor racing after last weekend? I've no idea. But you can see what what's actually coming through at the moment. Now, obviously, Swedish national hunt racing is nothing like on the level that it is in Great Britain and in Ireland. But you can see the danger signals. At least I can.
I think it's quite interesting. You'd like to be a fly in the wall at the meeting of the bookmakers to decide that. Now, did they decide that because they've been badgered by animal rights groups? Or did they decide that because racing's not as profitable as other sports are and it's a good excuse to get out of the racing market?
Well, you could read that into it, I suppose. But the inference was in the article that I read, and I think I sent it through to you, was that basically it was all to do with the fact that a horse was involved, and there was a danger element by virtue of it jumping a fence or a hurdle.
Well, the interesting thing is my understanding from years ago, and again, things change, and I don't always keep up to date on things like harness racing. Absolutely massive in Scandinavia. I was told years ago the betting turnover on that is more than we turn over on horse racing by a long chalk. So that involves horses. So I don't see that they necessarily want to get out of that. But then again, I don't know what kind of media rights deals they've had to pay for that particular sport. It's not something I have any interest in. What I have written down is I'm refusing to go to IKEA, drive a Volvo, or listen to ABBA. ABBA is off the playlist now because they've done this. Yeah. I don't want to get into politics because we're not here for politics. We're here for horses. But I would say that we seem to live in a world where the minority are listened to and the majority are ignored. And that applies to horse racing, that applies to affordability checks, it applies to all sorts of other things in the world. I have said for over 20 years now that I will happily see horse racing banned. I have no issues with that, but not until you've done away with the likes of grouse shooting, angling, and all the cruelty that goes on to cats, dogs, parrots in a cage that's less than a foot wide. Is that not crueler than how racehorses are treated? I don't understand. Now, I'm dead serious there. If this world did away with all the other cruelty, which in my honest opinion is far worse than what goes on in horse racing, and then horse racing was next on the list, then I wouldn't have a leg to stand on.
No.
And I would have to give in, albeit not happily, but I'd have to give in. But it isn't. And it's just the case that horse racing is televised and publicised, and therefore it's a fantastic place for the animal-led people to get their point across. We all know, and if you watch that docuseries again, harking back to that, if you watch how loved those horses are, I believe Paul Nicholls...
I've seen it firsthand.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But Paul Nicholls uses a phrase, five-star hotel, I believe, in that docuseries. No one wants them hurt. Will I admit to crying when I see a horse injured? Yes, I will, quite happily. No problem there at all. Yeah. It breaks my heart. But animals get injured and die in fields around the country.
There are actually more that get injured running loose in a field than there will ever be on a racetrack.
Yeah. Hundreds of times a day, but they're not on television, and therefore they don't get the animal-led people the publicity they're looking for. And will we end up that way? Personally, the first thing I'd do is do away with summer jumping. Now,
I don't even watch it, you know.
No, I'm not really interested in it either. I don't necessarily, I know Utox is racing Sunday and they watered quite heavily to get the ground to good. So in actual fact, it probably won't be the faster ground that would be any issues, God forbid, should any injuries happen on Sunday. Mm. However, that's not what people will say. They will turn around and say, it's because you raced on hard ground, you cruel, nasty people, horse racing, and et cetera, et cetera. And I don't see why we're giving them weaponry. Also, you're getting some fairly fragile, flat-built horses running on the jumps because you're running on fast ground.
Get
rid of summer jumping. Winter, boggy, heavy, stodgy ground. Get the proper stall horses. Don't race till they're four or five that are bred for national hunt and built accordingly. And we might get less attrition.
I'll tell you what, if I was a jockey, I'd rather be falling off one in the winter than the summer, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't side with what they're doing. I am worried that it is something that will happen in the future. I don't know how long is a piece of string for what sort of future we're talking about. 5 years, 20 years, I don't know. But I can see it coming. I don't see the idea of 4 hurdles was any better than 8 hurdles, quite frankly. I don't know whether, because you're going to be taking them at more speed.
You would have thought so, wouldn't you? Yeah.
I don't necessarily think that's the answer, but that shows the ignorance of the people making the decisions, I suppose. But a bookmaker would be right, ditto to Flutter, not pricing up at Chepstow or Leafield. Every bookmaker has the right to say, I'm not taking bets. They obviously feel that they can attract an extra X thousand punters who are vehemently anti-horse racing, but will come to them for football and other sports if they do decry horse racing. So that's their call to make, but it is a concern, isn't it?
It is, yep. And speaking of Sunday, speaking of Sundays and you talked to her and all the rest of it, what is going on? I've mentioned this now, I think it was the last 2 weekends, I don't know whether I've suddenly noticed, but you're getting 6 meetings on the Friday or the Saturday, and then 5 meetings on the Friday or the Saturday, and then you're getting neither none or one on the Sunday. What is that all about? I think I was it last weekend? I worked out we had 40 races and just under 600 horses racing on the Friday. How bonkers is that?
Well, it makes perfectly good sense to have loads and loads of good horses and loads of good races on a day when most people are at work. And obviously it makes no sense to have have a lot of racing when people could actually have the day off. Now, I know I'm of an age where I was brought up in the 9 to 5 Monday to Friday routine. I know things have changed. People work from home, et cetera, et cetera. But 90% of my friends still work Monday to Friday. Home or not. So they're free at the weekends. So does it not make good sense to put on an entertainment spectacle, which is what racing is, on a weekend when people can go? Apparently not. Yeah. We're stupid. I mean, I was looking at it, I'm a soft southerner. I've written that down here, soft southerner here. But last Sunday we had Redcar. Well, that's a bit of a long way for me to go from Gatwick Airport.
But it was horrendous racing as well. It wasn't worth a carrot.
It wouldn't matter if it was Group 1s. It's still too far for me to head off.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Sunday, the only flat meeting is from Pontefract. The nearest one other than that is Uttoxeter. Now, that's 143 miles or 3 hours from London and over 4 hours from my house. Now, I know it's not all about me, but the fact is the southeast of England is the most densely populated. It is where the majority of people live. And there is no race course that they can possibly go to at all on Sunday. Physically, not impossible, but really, really difficult. Now, where is the sense in that? Surely, at the very least, you have one north, one south.
Yeah, it would help, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Now, I understand that some of the days when there's been no flat racing has been negotiated with the Professional Jockeys Association, is my understanding.
But why is it always a Sunday?
Well, that's always been my question. Why not a Wednesday? It affects the stable staff a little, as in there's no travelling. You don't need travelling head lads to take the horses to the races. So you could cut your staff down a little on a Sunday in the yards, but they still need exercise. They still need feeding. They still need grooming. They still need mucking.
They do.
But it doesn't make a massive change. It is a 7-day-a-week job, just as Tesco's is, for want of an argument. And you know that when you get involved in sport. That's not me not feeling sorry for them, but you know that when you take the job, that it's a 7-day, I don't know whether they do 4 on 2 or whatever they do, but you know that 7 days need to be covered between you. So why it would be a Wednesday when people can't really get... for want of an argument, when people can't really get to the races, give them a Wednesday off with no flat racing and then put a couple of meetings on a Sunday where you might get a half decent crowd. I don't understand that either, is the truth. I don't have an answer. Sorry. But
the thing is, we've got 13 meetings today, tomorrow, and Sunday. Only one on the Sunday. Why not make it 4-5-4? Make it 4-4-4. I just don't understand it.
Well, I can also tell you 100% for a fact that we've had discussions with the BHA, or I have personally, about the geographical split, even when there is more than one. You sometimes get 3 meetings, but nothing south of, Wolverhampton, for want of an argument.
Yeah.
Where is the sense in that? And then the following day, there'll be Lingfield and Brighton and of an argument. Well, where is the sense in that? You need to geographically split them each and every day, so that whoever wants to go racing wherever they live has an opportunity to get there.
To go racing, yeah.
And that opportunity is being denied them, followed by, we can't quite work out why crowds are down. Anyone got any ideas? Well, yeah. I think we put that forward enough times, but you're not bothering to listen. But yeah, it's madness. I have to do in my other job or another job, I have to write three tips a day Saturday, three tips a day Sunday, and two tips a day in the week. And Sundays are always my biggest nightmare. Finding three from all the races on Saturday. I'm not saying to find all the winners or anything like that, but there's plenty of races to choose from, even if I do get it wrong. And generally speaking, midweek even, there's plenty of races to choose from. But Sunday, I'm looking at it going, well, I don't really like the jumps. So that's Utoxeter written out of the equation. I've now got to find three tips from seven races or whatever it is. It's at Pontefract. a limited pool to work from, and it makes life really difficult. But
you're guessing, aren't you?
Yeah, a lot of the time you can find one and go, oh, that looks good, that's okay. Well, where do I find the other two from? I mean, this week I was scrapping around. I even considered my old mate see it again. He's running in South Africa again on Sunday. Right. I even considered tipping one there. And then I looked at the German Oaks as well. Couldn't see anything like there. I'm absolutely scrapping around trying to find something to talk about on a Sunday.
Have you looked at the Pontefract card for Sunday yet?
Yes, I have.
Start with a four-runner race, and then slap bang in the middle, you've got a five-runner race, and you think, well, that's two races you wouldn't be bothering with anyway.
Exactly. Two straight out of the
equation. You've got to find three tips in five races.
I'll be honest with you, I've written the article already, and I started it with, if I was you, I'd reduce your bets or have a day off. Because, I'm just being honest, I'm scraping the bottom of the barrel. But never mind,
the last two races on that card, class six.
Really? Oh, God. Doesn't get any better.
Anyway, so the last topic. I gave this one a bit of thought. It was, how do we tell the public racing is in financial trouble?
Yep.
When someone is prepared to pay £660,000 for a horse that's only ever won bumpers?
Yep.
Like you say, we'd have to win two gold cups just to pay that back.
Yeah.
And we don't even know whether I can jump a hurdle yet. Well, when I read that, I thought to myself, well, racing we know is in trouble. The people that aren't are the types of people who've got £660,000 to spend on a horse, which is basically the equivalent of me spending £30 on five Cornets. You know?
Yeah.
£660,000 to these people. Is me spending £30 on ice creams. I'd be going, what? You know, but they don't care. It's, you know, they've got, their pockets are so deep. They could probably finance racing if they wanted to.
I don't argue with them paying it whatsoever. Decided their choice. And if I'd won the lottery last weekend, which funny enough, I didn't.
Strange.
I might have outbid them to try and win it myself. You never know, do you? I'm not decrying people who've gotten the money. I'm just decrying it from an outsider's point of view. When the BHA head off back to the new government with their begging bowl to discuss the levy for racing, and the risk to income from affordability checks, and then something like that is headline that they look at and go, people can afford to pay over £500,000 for a horse. Clearly the sport's not in trouble at all, is it? What are you talking about? It's not about the horse, who does look like he could go on to be a world beater, to be fair. It's not about the pockets, and it's not me being anti-rich people by any stretch. I just wish I was.
No.
But what it is about is the look it gives to racing when you go arguing and asking for money because we can't afford this and we can't afford that, followed by someone pays out that kind of money. It's just not a good look. That's all I'm suggesting, really.
Yeah. I know exactly where you were coming from,
Before I get to Alex Ferguson on the phone having a go at me.
I'll tell you what. Paul Nicholls should have some firepower in his yard this season, shouldn't he? This coming season. Didn't they pay that get one from Gordon Elliott that was not far off, £600,000?
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree. In actual fact, I suppose I should see the other side of the coin and say, fantastic, really, because perhaps we'll have some ammunition to go and have a go at Willie Mullins come short.
The Irish, yeah.
So from a racing perspective, I don't see any issue. I just don't think it's particularly a good look while the sport is free.
I am really looking forward to the national hunt season next year. I don't know what it is. Can't explain it. But when I've been looking at because I do sales work on it's cheltenham.com.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm looking at the money that's being spent on the horses. There are smaller yards who've now got big backers. I put an article up on It's Cheltenham about this. There's an ex-footballer funding one of the smaller female trainers. They went to the sales and they were bidding for these horses that, that have gone to the bigger yards. They didn't quite get those, but some of the horses they've got coming in. Brilliant. I cannot wait for this national hunt season. Oh, tell you what, really looking forward to it. Brilliant.
That's going to be an interesting thing to read because it's not an area I have any expertise on until I look at it race by race, whereas you're looking well
enough.
In that, I've always wondered whether point-to-points are a sort of money-making exercise in that somebody wins a point-to-point by 10 lengths and you never know how hard the others were trying and it's instantly sold for £150,000 or more.
Oh, I know, yeah.
And you look at it and go, really? Really? When the novice hurdle that's going to try and win first time out is worth £4,000 to the winner? It doesn't actually make any sense. And while I was in South Africa, I had a massive disagreement because we're good friends with an Australian bloodstock expert, and I was telling him that I think the bloodstock industry is a house of cards, basically. In that it's all made up with everyone telling you how wonderful it is. Well, you know, Frankel was turned out to be one of the best sires of all time by being sent to the best mares. But not every Frankel colt goes and wins a Guineas or wins a Derby or wins a Group One or wins a race at all. And yet the implication is, come to Frankel, £150,000, and you've got a world beater. Well, you haven't, have you, really? They can't all be world beaters. So I do think it's a bit of a house of cards ready to fall down. But if people are willing to pay it, why wouldn't you do it? But I have started, probably because of you, so I blame you for this waste of my time, looking at point-to-point, not point-to-point form per se, but I've looked at horses bought out of point-to-points and then gone back and tracked through everyone that finished ahead of them or behind them to see how well they've done in other point-to-points or when they've gone under rules to see. And have a look at Neil Mulholland's got one running in a maiden hurdle at Uttoxeter on Sunday. The form of that, his bumpers is working out quite well. Sorry, his point-to-points is working out quite well, so you might be worth a look. But, interesting to see, and all things for the future, Rob.
Keep an eye on Laura Morgan's yard this season coming. They're going places this season, definitely.
Good trainer, no argument there.
Yeah.
Talking of the future, should we go straight into the near future and start talking about this weekend's racing?
I might as well, ask it. Should we start with the 150?
I think it's a good place to start.
Yeah, it's a juvenile Group 3. Sees three of the front four on the tissue. Well, the second, third and fourth favourites, actually. They've raced once. They've won once. Mm-hmm. We've got a favourite that has raced twice and lost twice.
Yep.
It's then 10-1 bar that quartet. With that favourite strong on the tissue, 2-1 into 13-8 last time I looked. But it's already 0-2 at the trip and 0-1 at the track.
Mm.
Are you thinking to yourself, is that a good favourite? Three of the last five winners, they've returned SPs of 25-1, 15-2 and 16-1. So the unexpected, it does happen. It has about as much punching appeal for me as a bush tucker trial. I think, in fact, if somebody offered me a goat's eyeball for lunch or a bet in this, I'd be pondering which one to go for. But seriously, though, history dictates that you want to be working with a horse that's had at least two runs on the board, but trading no bigger than 16-1. So for me, the winner is one of Simmering, which is the favourite, Aviation Time, or Betty Clover. Now, this year, 2014 to 2017 inclusive, we had four consecutive winning favourites. And we had a second favourite winning in 2018. But like I say, we've seen a big swing in the last 5 years towards the bigger priced horses winning. And I'm thinking that if all eight do go to post, fingers crossed, you could do a lot worse and have a little 2080 Betty Clover here, around about 14-1.
Ooh.
Only beaten just over five lengths in the Group 2 Queen Mary at Royal Ascot. And her trainer, Eve Johnson-Houghton, is 5-19 with her runners in this type of race at Ascot over the last 10 years. She's got a whopping great level stake, £1 profit of £28.70p. So I'm thinking the 14-1, as I say, if all eight go to post and they don't get a deluge of rain, I don't want the word soft in the going description for this one.
No.
We might just get a run for our dongs here. I'm going for Betty Clover, 2080.
Well,
if you're worrying about what a dong is, it's a Vietnamese coin. Carry on. Sorry.
Very kind of you to explain that to me. Thank you. The form book isn't always guaranteed to be upheld, as we all know. If it is upheld, then Simmering wins this and does it with ease. Second last time out, she hit the front, going reasonably well, looked all over the winner, and then that man, Ryan Moore, pounced on one of O'Brien's to win going away, and there was a bit of a shock there because they really thought that she was going to get to the front when it mattered. Maiden after two starts, started with a third to Araby at York. The winner, Araby's gone on and taken a Group 3 and a Group 2 at Chantilly since, which really boosts the form. She was sent off a 9-1 chance for the Albany Stakes at Royal Ascot under Jamie Spencer. Looked set to pounce, got past Heaven's Gate, and then Ryan Moore appears out of nowhere on Fairy Godmother. Now I can see what I've written down. She's been bought by Al Shekab. I can't find how much that was for, but you can imagine it was quite a hefty sum because she was in the Sanctus Cup before that. She'll be unlucky if she runs into anything anywhere near as good as Fairy Godmother here. There are some decent rivals, like you said. The three unbeaten ones could be anything or nothing. We'll have to see after the race. She didn't, although she was second in a decent race to a very decent sort, she didn't really quicken up in the style of a superb filly, if you see what I mean. So I think she's the likeliest winner. It's really difficult for me to oppose her on form. Is she value at 13-8? No, I don't think she's value.
Didn't think so, no.
I don't think she was value at 2-1, which she was last night either. But that form's the best. She deserves a win. And interestingly, Ryan Moore takes over in the saddle, which I don't ever see that as a bad thing, quite frankly. I think he's the best jockey in the world.
I'm just not put a place with mine, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't blame you at all. I wouldn't be surprised if Simmering found one too good again. But, you know, I work on the form book as well as what I hear and see, gallops and stuff. And on the form book, I can't oppose Simmering, unfortunately. It's one of those days, you know, some days I come up with some ridiculous outsiders. Other days I seem to be stuck with favourites. And today, sadly, for everyone's one of those days. But I think Simmering... Simmering has the best form, and I can't oppose her for that reason.
Yeah. Okay. Right. 225 at Ascot.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Do you know what? I got the winner of this last year, but don't ask me how, because if I was looking to work this race now with the stats and trends that I use, it wouldn't fit. So I don't know why it did last year. Anyway, it's another Group 3, and historically, the three-year-olds just edge it. We've had no winning favourites since 2015. And in the intervening period, we've seen three winners returning SPs of 14-1, 11-1, and 12-1. But it does feel like things have calmed down a bit now. The last two winners have come home at 100-30. It all suggests to me that the winner is one of Devoted Queen or Soprano. It's pretty much close to being 3-1 joint favourites as I was typing that out. Devoted Queen, unbeaten in three starts, and I've got absolutely no idea how good she is. But her trainer, Charlie Appleby, he's got a stunning record in this kind of race at this track. 62 runners in the last 10 years, 10 winners, bringing home a level stake profit of 16.28 points. Nice. I'd take that.
Yeah.
Basically, I've got so little to go on. That's the main stat that I can apply. And I'm going to be putting up Devoted Queen, straight win.
Yeah, she's got £5 to find on official ratings. I know people say you shouldn't take ratings for granted or use them at all, is what one professional punter said, but I don't agree with that. I think it's a good guideline as to what a full-time paid group of handicappers decide how good they are, and they've got more time and effort than I have. She's unbeaten. I'm always wary of horses that wear headgear. I always have been, always will be. It's an old-fashioned. She wears a hood. She wore one last time as well. She's unbeaten after three races. Not really been tested. I think it's more her attitude that saw her only win by a neck or what it was. I struggle with the Appleby horses this year. Whenever I back them, they lose. Whenever I don't back them, they win. That's how it feels anyway. he's had rough patches and good patches. Daughter of King went out of a Chamadol mare. Only had the one start at two winning a Newmarket maiden. Next success at Kempton in the Condition Stakes. And a two-length success in listed class when she tried the hood at York. As you said, because I've written it down, so I might as well repeat it, we just don't know how good she is. And they say you don't know how good they're beaten, so we don't really know. Headgear stays on to keep on the straight and narrow. Rise unbeaten, difficult to oppose. Supremely confident? No, I'm not. I think
the thing about Soprano for me is we know she's a good horse, but she doesn't win often enough. She's run nine times on the flat. on turf and placed in six of them.
Yeah.
I just get the feeling she's one of those that likes to see a backside in front of her. I might be wrong.
Well, Devotee Queen's the opposite. She hasn't been beaten yet, but she hasn't been tested at this kind
exactly,
of level.
Exactly, yeah.
So it's a 50-50 on that one. Friendly Soul could go well with the Gosden Yard going, you know, in good form at the moment. I'm sticking with Devoted Queen, but again, another favourite, and again, another favourite where I'm not supremely confident, but again, she looks like she has the improvement in her to move up to this grade and do so with ease. But we'll have to wait and see. Where are we going next?
Stick with Ascot, 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
Welcome to my world.
Exactly.
Welcome to my world. A magical 18 in a handicap.
Yeah.
And the horse that I punted at 22-1 for the Wokingham at Royal Ascot, Arazio, has been punted from 13-2 into 9-2 favourites since this market opened. Should have won at Royal Ascot, there's no doubt about that. Didn't. Got beaten a head and a neck, finishing like an absolute bullet. I'll tell you what. Anyway, what does profiling say here then? Well, 8 of the last 10 winners have been aged 4. 4 of them. And 5. 4 of them. So they make up my fair shortlist. 4 and 5-year-olds. Make Me King, Ratio, there at the moment. Metal Merchant, Billy Joe, Divine Libre, Dancing Magic, Alto, New Image, and Eminency. So next we go to the weight ranges. And I want nothing in my next list carrying more than 9'7". I may need to revisit this if I have 2 or more to split at the end of this spiel. But nothing in the last decade has won carrying more than 9'7". So I've lost the ratio. I've got left Metal Merchant, Billy Joe, Divine Libre, Dancing Magic, Alto, New Image, and Eminency. So down to 7. Next, what I do is I pick my way through the SPs of the last 10 winners. And surprisingly, for such a competitive race as this, 4 of the last 9 winners actually went off favourite. And another returned second favourite. So the market tends to get this one quite right. We've had 4 winners coming home at 33s, 50, 20 and 16 to 1 last year. But if something like that wins tomorrow, I lose money because I'm looking at the front 5 on the tissue. They would have netted me 6 of the last 9 winners. So I'm left with Billy Joe, Alto, and New Image. Right, that includes my favourite horse for 2024, by the way, Alto. Going back to Newmarket in May, top rated 40-1, got beat half a length.
Ooh,
I then managed to grab a little bit of the 33-1 for the Bunbury Cup recently. So it won at about 15-2, I think it was. I'll be dutching the 3 for sure, as all 3 are also drawn right. You need to be running from a double figure box. Only 2 of the last 10 winners raced from a stall lower than 11. So my profiling selection, because, well, as I say, I'm Dutchie and I want one for this. It's got to be Billy Joe. I did say I'd revisit the weights again.
Mm-hmm.
7 of the last 10 winners carried more than 9 stone. And he's the only one of those 3 doing so tomorrow. So Billy Joe is it. 2080, that'll do for me, Billy Joe.
Interesting. Time to pour another beer, everybody, because I've gone through the stats as well, though slightly different as we do. So you might need another beer to cope with this one. Though I don't think we're very different here. We'll come to that in the conclusion. I've looked at the last 15 years, which is 14 runnings. It was abandoned on one occasion. Intriguingly, firstly, 13 winners were priced at 33-1 or shorter. That loses a couple, nothing exciting. We haven't a single winner in 14 runnings coming out of stalls 1, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10. Not one. Not a single winner. 12 horses finished in the first 9 last time out. 13 were aged 4-6. 13 were officially rated 103 or less. All 14 were rated 89 or higher. Add that lot together, which doesn't sound very exciting, I accept, and I end up with 5, which isn't very different to yours, I don't think. Metal Merchant, Billy Joe, Dancing Magic, Alto, and New Image.
Well, of the trainers, in my list,
exactly. Of those 5, or 6, whatever it is, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Of those 5, none of the trainers have won this before, so I've got nothing to learn there. But what I found out then is that 7 winners in the last 15 years, which is quite a high number, were last seen running in the Bunbury Cup here.
I missed that one.
Yeah, guess who won the Bunbury Cup?
That's right. It's Alto.
Yeah.
Yeah. Won it by a couple of lengths under Ross Orion. Now, the interesting thing that backs you up as well is that Ross Orion rode Alto that day, and he switches to Billy Joe with Luke Morris on Alto. Now, I'm with Alto each way. Alto each way for me, so I'm not going to be the same. Alto 8-1 each way. He's got £3 penalty for that win. He goes up another £4 for future contests. He's effectively £4 well in here if you listen and take advice on handicap ratings, which, as I said earlier, other people say I shouldn't, but I do. He's £4 well in here at the weights. 8-1 looks an each way price. He arrives in winning form, comes from a race that's produced the winner 7 times. There's not a lot to dislike to, and comes from a good draw in the 14. So there's not a lot to dislike. 8-1 each way, Alto for me, though I can absolutely see why Billy Joe is your pick. And it was nip and tuck between the two for my final decision.
There you go. Straight, do a twist forecast.
Yeah, why not? Well, I'm tempted to cover the 5 in 10-penny forecast for the fun of it. But we're next. We're off to York, aren't we?
Oh, do you know what? I did all my Ascot races first, and then I thought, right, I'll leave York till last. Went there, down to 4 runners.
Oh, is it really? Oh, dear. Sorry about that. I'll never know
That's all right. I'll get you back. Somebody, one of those 4 is going to win 76,000 quid tomorrow. It's pointless me trying to tell you the winner is usually front three on the tissue because we've only got 4 runners. But it is. Ditto, my telling you the winner usually retains a single-figure price is equally redundant because they're all 8-1 or shorter. So I can't profile this race. I can't even apply my stats accurately to a race like this because not only is everything up in the air with 4 runners, you're also going to see a false pace because there's only 4 runners.
Yep.
What I will tell you is, I've been waiting to see Passenger again since he won the Chester Group 2. Won it easily in May. Here he's trading the 7-4 favourite, and he's being supported as well. Before the Tote 10 to Follow started, somebody emailed me and said, I'm doing the Tote 10 to Follow. I know you've had a pop at that in the past. Have you got a banker? And I told him Passenger would be my banker for this competition. Now, we've had to wait till near enough the end of July to see him again.
Yeah.
But I can't wait to see him. I thought he looked different gravy, you know. I hope tomorrow he proves me right. My selection for this is based on nothing other than pure bias. Passenger.
Seems as good a reason as any to come up with a horse, isn't it?
Four horse race, yeah.
Sad news for you, Ron. I agree with you. He was really highly regarded as a three-year-old, was expected to run a big race in the Derby and didn't, quite frankly, behind August Rodin. Won the Group 3 Windhill Stakes at Windsor on his final start, given the winter off. It always looked the sort to me like he was going to be better at 4. That was my viewpoint. Won the Group 2 Huxley Stakes, slowly away, shorter room, but he still pounced the win by a length and a half.
Yeah.
I'm convinced he's bred to be better the older he gets. I'm hoping that would be the case. Al Flayler won it last year. And is officially £1 Passenger's superior and gets £3 from him. So it's not going to be a cakewalk.
No, it won't be.
Fairly certain that Al Flayler's been laid out for this race by Owen Burrow. So I don't think it's going to be easy for Passenger, which is presumably why he's odds against. But he impressed me as well, as much as you can at that level. And I think Passenger will win. But again, he's another favourite where I'm like, would I fall over his shock if he'd beaten? No, I wouldn't, in all honesty. Well, I think the stout horses are starting to click into top gear now. So that's a positive at the very least. But yeah, Passenger for me as well, but with all the confidence I've had of the earlier favourites. But now I'm actually more confident of my 8-1 each way in the big handicap. And you know me, I could chuck the handicaps in for you. I don't chuck them in for me. Than I am in most of those in group races.
It felt like a good one to work on that though, didn't it? It really did feel a good race to work on.
It was nice when you put the facts together and it comes up with a short list of any kind. It's good. It's when you put the facts together and it comes up with either 15 of them still stick in there or none of them fit the stats. And you go, alarm bell's ringing, what do I do now? I think the stats look pretty good for that. So I'm more confident there. But Passenger in this one and one race to go with the...
the big one, King George.
Yes.
Yeah. Haven't we seen some great races for this prize in the past, though? But I tell you what, it's gone down the neck a bit, hasn't it? It's getting easier to try and find a winner now. In the past, you'd be looking at the three-year-olds and thinking, do you know what? They've got a squeak here. But you're looking at this race now, and there's... How many three-year-olds are there? Is it one?
I think, Irish Derby second. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you're thinking to yourself, well, I've got to stick with the older horses. So I want nothing younger than four, and I want nothing older than five. Weight ranges don't apply because it's that type of race. So all I can do next is look at what the tissue's telling me. And seven of the last 10 winners returned an SP of 72 or shorter. Now, you definitely get class telling in races like these. It has to, because it's that type of race. The only horse that can win it, if he turns up, is August Rodin. I cannot see him being beaten. He fits all the trends spot on. But you just, I can't have a bet on him. I will never back the horse again in my life after seeing some of the things he's done in the past. Nothing's guaranteed with him. But if he turns up tomorrow, he wins tomorrow. Simple as that. August Rodin.
Well, I was always told, firstly, let's say, go back, you said, haven't some good horses won this in the past, etc. I made a list here because I enjoy it, and these are just my personal picks. Nijinsky, yeah. Bill Reef, The Minstrel, Troy, Shergar, Time Charter, there's a name from the past. Dancing Brave, my old mate Michael Roberts on Matoto, Nashwang, Montshire, yeah. Galileo. Wow, we've seen some superb horses winning this.
Anyone superstars.
This is the best horse I've ever trained. No offence to you, Aidan, when you say that sort of thing, but compared to some of those superstars, nothing lives up to them so far. August Rodin, someone told me, and it was rumour and nothing more before anyone tries suing me for it, that August Rodin bleeds sometimes.
Is that what it is?
Well, apparently his relatives have. This was someone who follows the breeding far closer than I do, so I have no idea whether he's talking out of his backside or telling the truth. I honestly don't know. But that it would certainly be a good explanation for why he runs an absolute stinker now and again. That's the problem with him. If the real August Rodin turns up, the real August Rodin wins this. Now, I'm just looking through the form or trying to on my two-screen computer. Now, he was beaten 22 lengths by Rebel's Romance on the turf at Maidan.
Oh, no, yeah.
Now, obviously, he was eased off. He was sent off 11 to 8 favourite. He's eased off that day. Something wasn't right. No one's suggesting otherwise. But the bottom line is he can have an off day.
A sticker.
And that's the issue. Now, if you want each way value, I have no doubt whatsoever that Sunway at 14 to 1 is the each way call without a shadow of a doubt. Second in the Irish Derby behind August Rodin's stablemate, Los Angeles, only beaten three quarters of a length. Doesn't win, he's only won two races, a Group 1 at Saint Cloud and a maiden at Sandown. But that second puts him onto a rating of 115. Because he's a 3-year old, he actually gets £11 from August Rodin here. So that adds him up to a rating of 126.
Which puts him as the best horse in the race.
Which makes him the best horse in the race. August Rodin and Rebel's Romance both rated 123.
123,
So if you want an each way bet to pennies, I wouldn't put anyone off somewhere. He doesn't win often enough for my liking. But that form, you can't write him off, can you? And I really don't think he should be that big. Wary that he might like a bit of giving the ground because his win was on very soft in France and good ground at Sandown. And he's going to get good ground here, I suppose, so he should handle it. Wouldn't put anyone off backing him each way. Will I be backing August Rodin? Probably in small multiples or something along those lines. Will I be lumping on him? No, because how do you do that on a horse that never runs two races the same? Or rarely runs the same? What I would say is that I'm confident that Aidan O'Brien wants to prove just how good he is. He's a son of Deep Impact, and the point behind that is his future at stud is guaranteed and always was guaranteed. Such an influential sire is no longer with us. I believe he was the only Group 1 winning son of Deep Impact in training at the moment. So his value is immeasurable as far as stud goes. So the fact they chose to keep him in training at four actually came as a bit of a surprise, to be honest. But I think they want to prove just how good he is. Where he goes from here is anybody's guess. There's been talk of trying the Breeders' Cup Dirt. I know that's a race that the boys in Coolmore want to win. Whether it be August Rodin or City of Troy, we'll have to wait and see. I suspect City of Troy is more likely. But he'll certainly go back to the Breeders' Cup. On his best, I can't even work out why Rebel's Romance is rated as highly as he is, to be honest.
I can't. No, I looked at that.
Yeah. That's the truth. At his best, I think he eats these alive. Simple as that. But will he be at his best? That's the question mark that we won't know till about 3:44 on Saturday afternoon. But I can't go against him because at his best, he's a very, very good horse. So August Rodin for me, but with a sort of a disclaimer that says don't go in too heavy.
So
Now, button.
Go. Yep. Ready?
Oh yeah, always.
We've had millions of them since the last podcast. But what I did was I thought we had a cracking night the other night with the M's, the ones I put up the night before racing.
Oh, yeah.
At the evening meetings, there were four, and all four won. So I'll pick three of them. We've got the first one is Maritime Lady. 5-1 into 3-1, slid a little bit to 7-2, won at 11-4. Next one, same night, Madame de Savine. 6-1 into 5-2, slid a little bit to 7-2, won at 9-2. The best one, though, was a horse called Sir Gabriel. Opened up 12-1, hit 9-1, made sure that went up the night before. Following morning, I've got a big flame next to it. It's gone 7-1. Only went and won at 11-2, didn't it? Brilliant. I've been looking forward to doing that again.
Not surprised. What's your something for the weekend, sir? Even if other people...
It's got to be Billy Joe in the big handicap. I really like it, you know.
Ah.
2080, because it's competitive.
Well, I'm going out of the box again. Story of my life.
Go on.
A horse called Seagalazo in the 2-10 at Chester on Saturday. So 2-10 at Chester? What is he talking about, the mad fool? trained by Hugo Palmer, son of Havana Gray. He showed plenty of promise on his Lingfield debut. Anyone think I was reading this, wouldn't they? So plenty of promise on his Lingfield debut, but took a huge step forward as only other start when third at Haydock, beaten a length and a half. He was really badly hampered by a loose horse, which cost him lengths halfway through the race. He then hung badly as well, which didn't help his cause. Did remarkably well to get as near as he did. If he gets a clear run here, and knowing Hugo, they'll put a special bit in or something like that to try and stop him hanging. If he keeps a straight path and doesn't get hampered by another horse, then he looks the likeliest winner the entire weekend to me. So won't be much of a prize. Yeah, a winner will do. See Galazzo, 2-10 Chester, Saturday. There you go.
Be interested to see what the market says about that one.
I think he's going to go a favourite.
The yard likes winners at Chester.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be a good price, but I'd rather have a short price winner than a long price loser. So,
beans on toast. Yeah,
exactly. That's how it works. Okay, right.
1 hour coming up, 1 hour 3 minutes. Oh. How do we cram that lot into that? Good.
I said to Ron, my notes for this 2,471 words. So don't you think we don't write things down first? You're wrong. So yeah,
yeah.
This is what happens when we delay podcasts. Too much to talk about.
I bet you we've said twice as many.
Yeah. Well, we'll be back in a week or whatever. I have no idea. I'll talk to Ron about that later. Fun for the weekend. Let's hope we found a few winners in there somewhere. I'm sure we've got some between us. If the form book holds up, then I have. And if it doesn't, then I'm going to look like an idiot once again. But that's how it is. Good luck with the handicap. I'm certainly going to do a forecast on yours and mine, because we both going to.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm going to double as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Got to be done. Reverse forecast. Go for it. Yeah. Right. Have a good one, and we'll be back soon.
We will and all. Take care. See you soon.
Bye bye now. Post racing, the site for winners.